You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello and welcome to the April edition of A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. I'm once again here joined by my friend Julie. Hello, Julie.
Hi.
And we're also joined by a guest for this month, namely Laura Bintz. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
So to begin with, perhaps, how about you just tell us in your own words about yourself, who you are, what kind of culture you enjoy?
So I am a historian by training. And when I started my studies in history in far back 2001 at the University of Bern, I was convinced that I would specialize in contemporary history. And indeed, one or two of the first classes I took at universities was about First World War and the Second World War. However, I then spent a year in Erasmus in Bologna, so in Italy, and my interest shifted pretty quickly from contemporary history to early modern history and the Mediterranean region. So perhaps this might not be a surprise when you look at the movie I picked. And I would say that during grammar school already, and then during my studies, I started to go regularly to the cinema, the theater, and also to concerts of any kind, from classical concerts with my grandmother to rock concerts with my dad or hip-hop concerts with my friends. And then I would also say that my interests with movies shifted from blockbusters at the beginning with 16, 17 years, more towards arthouse movies. And today the Cinema Rex in Bern is my favorite cinema. And sometimes I meet Matt at the Cinema Rex. The last time we met it was for the Battle of Algeria. So it was also kind of a war movie.
Oh, yeah.
So the first films I saw when I was 17 or 18 years old was indeed Saving Private Ryan, or then a couple of years later, Pearl Harbor, where frankly speaking, the first half of the movie you are there and you're thinking, but when will finally the Japanese arrive? It's so boring. Yeah, so I think this was the start of my love for the cinema and movies.
So you started loving the cinema with Pearl Harbor. I think that is quite an achievement.
I like to go there to watch the movies and then to discuss already then with friends or colleagues about the movies. And yes, I then moved away from blockbuster films rather to a different kind of films.
The Battle of Algiers versus Pearl Harbor, that's quite a big difference, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, this already gives it away. We will be talking about war movies in this episode. We will later on talk about one specific special war movie. But I think to begin with, what we want to do is just set the scene a bit. War movies as a genre, of course, they've basically been very, very popular. But I think the interest in them has waned a bit. You don't see as many war movies these days as you would have 20, 30, 40 years ago, which is probably also something that changes over time with respect to what is going on in the world, what kind of wars there are. Are there wars? How do people feel about them? I think they kind of come and go in phases or in waves. So let's perhaps first just set the scene and talk a bit about what are war movies? What is the genre? What does the genre do? What do we like and dislike in terms of war movies? Laura, let's perhaps start with you, since you've already talked about basically the North Pole and the South Pole of war movies with the Battle of Algiers and Pearl Harbor. Do you like the genre as a whole, or are you more ambivalent about it?
I'm quite ambivalent about it because I have, of course, a very genuine historic interest in war movies. So often there is the problem, in particular also with these blockbusters film, that it is not always very historical. It's very much epic and heroic stories, mostly men doing something heroic. And I'm very ambivalent about that. And so speaking of Pearl Harbor, of course, it's quite a prototype, I think. What I like about war movies, and this is also why I moved then away from Pearl Harbor or also Saving Private Ryan, are the more complex stories behind wars. What you see not at first glance, and you do not have only the good and the evil, so normally the English and Americans against Germans, but it's more complex. And I like these really more complex elements or levels in war movies. So more or less at the same time when I was at the cinema to see, let's go back to Pearl Harbor, I also saw Apocalypse Now Redux. This was also in 2001. So this is really an impressive movie. It's going towards the direction of an anti-war movie. Probably this reflects also a little bit my personal attitude towards war. Another example is Waltz with Bashir on the Lebanon War. It's an animated documentary drama from Israel. No Man's Land, a film about the Bosnian War, but there we are pretty much moving towards the anti-war and films that really show the atrocity of the war, the absurdity of the war, and that it's, I would say, never the best option mankind has. Or womankind has.
I think we can all agree on that for sure, yeah.
What about you, Julie? What is your take on war movies? Did you grow up with them?
Yeah, of course I did. When I started getting into this podcast, I asked myself the question, what do I think a war movie even is? So I went and asked my partner, because that's the easiest way. And he came up with, again, Apocalypse Now, for instance, and Platoon. For me, it's usually World War II. So you go from Schindler's List to perhaps Life is Beautiful, stuff like that. And I think when I think about what a war movie is, you are talking about combat film. Even if it's an anti-war combat film like All is Quiet on the Western Front, which I think also approaches war from a very anti-war standpoint. So you would need a hero, right? You would need a band of misfits, or at least a group of mismatched people with some sort of military objective in some sort of combat setting, right? That's what I would think a war movie is. But of course, it turns out, Laura, you mentioned very rightly the Battle of Algiers. That is not all a war movie is. That's my first association. As to what I grew up with, I mean, we had Schindler's List in school. It was mandatory, for instance, that sort of thing. And I will also give full disclosure here. It is not a genre I particularly like. And this is because, again, I agree with Laura completely, the historical inaccuracy bordering on propaganda-type heroism. Also, it won't surprise anyone that I'm very much anti-war. And I was reminded of the quote that is attributed sometimes to Truffaut, is that in making a movie about war, you make war heroic. Therefore, it is very hard to make a movie that is anti-war. So the heroism sometimes feels to me also rather misplaced, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah.
So that would be my take about what I think of war movies, how I feel about them.
Mm-hmm. I think we will definitely come back to some of the things you've both said now, also about genres or types or tropes in war movies. I'll just very quickly talk about my own background. I grew up very much with war movies. They were my mother's favorite genre. And I think one of the reasons for that is also my mother was English. My dad was German, so we basically had the Second World War nations that are basically most represented in culture, other than America, represented basically in my mother and my father. And there were also constant kind of private jokes we had about that every time that there was a football match of Germany against England, you know, will there be peace or will the war break out again? The war movies that my mother liked best were mostly black and white English war films. So they would have been from the, I would say, 50s or 60s, possibly even 40s. Perhaps to make a somewhat cliched distinction, my impression was always that the Americans very much made war films that were heroic. So the G.I. Joe type of thing, you know, men going into battle and defeating the enemy. The English type of war movie, I felt, always had a more tragic streak, but not necessarily less heroic for that. With the English films, it always felt a bit more like, we have to do this, it might not be good, but it is necessary. That is very much the kind of rhetoric that I felt was there. But I grew up in the 80s, so basically the films that I think of first and foremost, other than the black and white films that my mother watched off Betamax tapes, were films like Das Boot, the submarine classic, Platoon, obviously, but also in parallel series like MASH about the Korean War. So the war was omnipresent on our TV screen, very much so in the 80s. I also would say that I'm ambivalent about the genre. There is a lot there that I like, but I think the longer, basically the more I think about it, some of the films also I liked as a child, I might still like them, but I might like them in different ways. And I'm definitely more aware of everything that the two of you have said, how war films have a tendency towards the propagandistic. And I think that's probably where the tropes and the types and the subgenres come into it. I mean, Julie, you talked about these war as action, adventures, boys' own Dirty Dozen style films. I mean, that's definitely one type of war movie there is. What kind of other genres are you aware of? I mean, Laura, you mentioned the anti-war movie. Are there other tropes or subgenres in war film that you think are relevant also to our conversation?
Yeah, to me, one of the first and most obvious kinds of films that I watch that are about war are war documentaries. And those come in different shapes and sizes. You have the modern ones, also about Vietnam, for instance. But you also have the older ones that were about war, possibly also semi-propagandic ones that were about, you know, our great boys overseas. But I'm not even sure whether that's a genre that's allied somewhat to the war film or whether you could call it a subgenre. But a war documentary is a very different animal, I think, from other kinds of a documentary film that you could think about. It has its own point, its own look, its own feel, its own reason for being. I think one of the best and worth mentioning is Night and Fog, which is about the Second World War, which is heartbreaking. So that was one genre that I wanted to point out because it's almost never mentioned because most war films are basically within the realms of semi-fiction or historical fiction. And these try or aim for a sort of actuality. That's why I wanted to mention them.
Mm-hmm.
But they are often also problematic. So you can find some programs that show the whole day, some documentaries about the Second World War. And sometimes I stay there and I look for 10 minutes and I say, no, this is not possible because there also you have a quality problem often.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to show, I don't know, sources or you show film, I don't know, news reports from these times. Then you have to contextualize, you have to explain what you're doing, you have to have some historical knowledge in order to manage to get what they want to tell you or and often this is absolutely not the case.
And also, even if they are good, or even if we can all agree that they're good quality-wise, a lot of them are still very slanted. And that's an issue. Because if you look at a documentary, you think you're watching
yes.
the truth, or at least some sort of historical truth. Whereas a lot of them are really very, very coloured towards one side or another. So that's absolutely a great point that bears keeping in mind, even with the best of them.
Yeah, and the complexity is too much for the screen, for a film, for a documentary, for the television.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think that's the thing with documentaries. I think people know more how to watch fiction. Fiction is fiction. You're watching a story. It's probably not true. It might have a, you know, real life background. But when it comes to documentary, I think to some extent with documentaries, you almost need more of an awareness or a more media savviness. Because documentaries, I think lots of people still associate documentaries with the truth, which obviously is highly problematic, as you both have said. I think it's also, I sometimes get the impression that even if you look at it from a different angle, almost if you look at the different wars and the different nations involved in those wars, I think you almost have different genres. I think a Vietnam War movie is a completely different beast than, let's say, World War II movie. With World War II, you much more easily can go into this also facile, also inaccurate, you know, black and white morality and heroism. Whereas if you did the same thing with the Vietnam War movie, it would feel very strange. I think the Vietnam War films all tend much more towards one variety or other of anti-war movie. And then you've got World War I, which lends itself much more to the kind of pathos of, you know, we are all victims, which is also, of course, problematic. But it, again, the flavors are different. The feel is different. And the same, I think, is true for the nations. You know, an English war movie is very different from a German war movie, exactly because of the background of were we the good guys, were we the bad guys, and how do you communicate that?
That's interesting from the perspective, for instance, of Indonesian war movies between, you know, quotes, because I'm Dutch. And in the Indonesian War of Independence, I think we were very much the bad guys, and rightly so. So there is absolutely a perspective to them that's sometimes not easy to look at.
I wanted to say another thing, because we are moving to Italy afterwards, and the Italian genre of war movies is much less concentrated on the First World War and on the Second World War. Probably this is also because the great times of Italy were not really First and Second World War, but before. So war movies from the early modern times are popular, or even going back to the Romans. So there you have also Hollywood with Troy and these kind of... It's also a war movie. It's a battle at the end, no? But the genre of war movies is pretty much in the Anglo-Saxon world concentrated on First and Second World War. And in different countries, this focus may also be a little bit different.
Absolutely, very much so. And I think this already moves us on a bit about, you know, with respect to the topics that we're discussing. I think war movies, like any genre, but in some ways almost more so, say something about the time and place where they were made and released, who they were made for, obviously. So I just wanted to ask, you know, what do you think about how war movies are used for cultures to define themselves? Do you think that war movies say something about the cultures that they come from? And what do they say? What do they want to say, perhaps?
So my answer is yes, they are. They do. It's important when and where a movie was made. So when I was looking recently at Dunkirk, it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago, not so recently, I was there and I thought, okay, there will be Brexit. Great Britain is struggling to find its place in the world right now, or in Europe right now. And Dunkirk was really then a movie that showed an episode of a miracle that was made possible by the collective effort of all these people going to France with their boats. And probably, perhaps I'm exaggerating, but it was really, for me, it was a symbol of what Great Britain could have wanted at this moment, to see that together we can do it, we can do something that seems quite impossible. So just as one recent example.
Well, very much so. And this, again, betrays my ever-growing ignorance, because there are a lot of war movies that I know very little about. You watch Chinese movies, they're also often about the war, right? But we don't associate them with that genre, because that genre is very much World War One, World War Two, particularly the points I'd made earlier about the hero and the Band of Brothers. Those are Janine Basinger's descriptions, and she's a film historian, about the combat film, and those are nearly always World War Two films. So I haven't watched enough of them to even start saying, okay, apart from who the good guys are. I mean, think about, for instance, completely different type of film, Che. So Che 1 and Che 2, which are also, in most respects, war movies, right? But are from a completely different perspective, basically communist perspective, which informs who the good guys are, but also whether you can even point to a bad guy without losing all your viewers, right? So in that sense, not just what they're about, but where they're made, these can be two different things. And that can bring up a very interesting little conflict in the narrative within the film.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that war movies are probably more overtly political, even when they try not to be. I think when they try not to be political, that's when they're most political, because that's when they almost invariably slip into propaganda. But I think war very much says things about class, gender. They talk about questions like, for instance, masculinity. What do we think masculinity is? And also, what do the directors or the filmmakers think masculinity should be? There's some wonderful examples of exactly kind of showing how masculinity can be toxic that use war, or that talk about war. But there's also the opposite. Examples of toxic masculinity in themselves, which show, you know, men going to war and killing and thereby becoming even better men. So I think there's a lot there that's very interesting, and the nations definitely totally come into it, the self-image of nations. I mentioned the British before, and I think British war movies very often have this thing of, we are heroic victims almost, you know. Again, I said the pathos, the tragedy. So, you know, we're the good guys, but not in a gung-ho way. We're the good guys in the way that, you know, we mourn our dead, and we know that this is all crazy. war is hell and so on and so forth, but we still do it because a Brit's got to do what a Brit's got to do, which can be very distasteful even when, or perhaps even more so when it's technically done extremely well. I think especially World War I films from the UK, I've started to dislike them more and more exactly because of this, because they seem to come across as critical of the war, but I think it's basically this superficial gloss.
Couldn't agree more. And we started with this as well. I think it's something that bothers all of us a little bit. It's like, don't pretend that you are so against all this and tell this wonderful heroic story about boys will be boys and you know, become men through running the gauntlet of, I don't know, I can't really process that.
And I think this is probably a good time for us to transition to the movie that we're actually going to look at in more detail. Laura, do you perhaps quickly want to tell us what it is we're going to be looking at and discussing?
Yes, so we will discuss the film Mediterraneo. So it's an Italian film and it won the Academy Award for the best film of foreign language in 1992. It was quite a surprise because there was another very good Chinese movie in the same category, but Mediterraneo won. Perhaps afterwards we can also talk or ask why this was the case. So the film starts in 1941. A small group of, like Julie said before, misfit Italian soldiers or reservists is sent to a small Greek island in the Aegean Sea, and they should go there for 4 months of lookout duty. So already in the first night of their stay at the island, they see that the boat, the vessel on which they were brought to the island, was bombed and attacked by the British and it went down. So they knew that they were quite isolated, even more so because their radio was destroyed also in the first or second night at this island. The island is empty. But after some days, mysteriously, people reappear in the village. And afterwards, between these Italians and the Greek population of the island, a new, how to say, everyday lives is established. And these Italian soldiers, we can say, they are really well integrated into this local community. And more or less, the rest of the war happens quite far away from them and they stay there more or less until the end of the war. So perhaps in case I can say two words about the historical context.
Yes, please.
Because it's far away from the first line of war. So Italy joined Germany against the Allies in June 1940 under the dictator Benito Mussolini. So it was a fascist dictator. And with Italy's entry, new fronts opened in North Africa and also in the Mediterranean. And there was a Greco-Italian war. So there actually was a war between Italy and Greece, but not in Mediterraneo. So I won't go into the details of this Greco-Italian war because I think it's not that relevant for the movie and for our discussion. However, what I would like to say is on the 8th of September 1943, Italy signed an armistice with the Allies and declared war to Germany on 14th of October 1943. So they switched sides, and from this moment, the former Allies became enemies and the former enemies became Allies. And these soldiers, these misfit soldiers on this Aegean island, they are not aware of any of this. But at the end, it is the British who are coming to get them or to bring them back to Italy. So this is more or less the context. And the film pretty much starts like a war movie because, I don't know, perhaps the first 10 minutes. So they arrive in a small vessel with a donkey on this island. They are expecting an attack from some defenders or Greek soldiers. Nothing happens. And then the war fades away. So there is one of the soldiers, he writes, Italy, I'm thinking about you during the day and I'm dreaming about you during nights. So this is more or less the setting, and they get involved with the population. And it is we have these male soldiers, of course, and then we have predominantly female population of the island because the men have been taken away by the Germans. So this is more or less the setting.
You had seen the film before, I think, Laura. Julie, you hadn't.
No.
You just only saw it very recently, right?
Yeah.
What was your first reaction? What do you think of it on the first viewing?
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but it didn't surprise me at all that it won the Oscar. It didn't surprise me at all. I liked it. I liked the characters. I liked the actors. I liked the gentle absurdity of it. I think I liked bits of it strung together more than I did as a whole. There are little scenes. There are two of the boys are set on lookout and then left alone completely. And they go, you know, slightly bonkers and a little bit weird. And they think the island is abandoned. And then suddenly they find a packet of cheese that's been left for them in good faith by these locals they don't yet know anything about. And those are such wonderful little moments. And you mentioned the donkey, Laura, which is a wonderful little character. And so in that sense, I really, really liked the film. But it is a very mild film. It's not the grit and grimness that you would expect from a film that basically has then, under a fascist regime, invaders invading a small Greek island full of complete innocence. It's a very gentle film and it's a very sweet film.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. I also watched it first a couple of weeks ago in preparation for this podcast. And I think it's a very gentle film. It's a very warm film already in its images. But also, you don't often think of war movies as warm. Very often they're basically the opposite of that. If it's World War I, it's all rain and cold and everyone is miserable. If it's World War II, it might be in the Pacific and then it's hot, but not warm. It is a film that I think makes for a very interesting movie to discuss when we talk about war films, because obviously it's a war film where the war happens elsewhere. And in a way, that goes back to what you said before, Julie, about, you know, what makes a war film. It's not a combat film, except these men are ready for combat. They might not want it. One of them, okay, ready. I think they know there's a possibility of combat, but at the same time, none of them or almost none of them strike you as soldiers in a classical sense. If anything, I have to say that what I had to think of almost was something like Asterix. They have the very same kind of slightly cartoony, you know, they're types that are played up for humor, also different classes, different backgrounds. And in a way, they're basically, you know, they come there expecting the war and the war doesn't happen, which is very interesting. So, Laura, perhaps can you tell us something about why you chose this film?
Yes, so I saw the film several years ago, I have to say, when we first talked about the film and then we chose to pick this one. I watched it again 2 weeks ago and I agree with Julie, I like some parts of it. I like the atmosphere of the film, but of course there are also very critical elements. And I would say I have the ambivalence I have towards war movie, also towards this war movie, even if the war is not that present. But it's pretty much an escape from the war for these soldiers. So these are reservists, so they are already a little bit older than the average soldier. Their training is perhaps some time ago, but so one of the characters is quite motivated, Lorusso. The others, I would say, rather not. And they say that they are so, but they are not young anymore, but they are not settled yet. And they find themselves on this island and then they can escape from their everyday life at home. That is quite shallow, I would say. We do not have much information, but the information we have, together with the historical context, it might have been rather shallow, and they find themselves on this island too. It is a light movie, but to reflect somehow on the war and on their life. So this is the part I like. And another part I like is this notion of Mediterranean. So this is very old from the Roman time. And then also Fernand Braudel, a famous French historian who talks of the Mediterranean as one big region of culture. And this topos is very strong in the film. Also with, they say, one face, one race, to Greeks, to Italians, to Turkish. And so they are intertangled, interrelated. They have been for centuries, forever. And this element also is very strong. But perhaps I'll give the word to you and we can then come back to the strengths and weaknesses perhaps of the films or the critical or typical. There are very typical elements for an Italian war film. And I think the characters that are quite, they are nice guys at the end. Most of them and most of the time. And there is some, I mean, for an American audience, it represents somehow also the cliché you might have when you think about Italian or Greek people.
And interestingly, some of these stories are come close to truth. There were soldiers stationed on islands that didn't see combat at all. And some of them were absolutely Germans. I mean, not all of them were Mediterranean at all. But what I do like is that, okay, this is a fantasy and this is a shirking of responsibility and running away from a man's domestic responsibility and domestic life, which is shown very neatly by one character who keeps trying to desert to be with his wife and keeps failing. And this sort of accentuates that the rest of the cast of characters just basically are fine with not having all sorts of domestic responsibilities that they have to go back to, or the war that they have to go back to, right? So it's an escapism in that sense. But in another sense, some of these stories were partly true. That's what I thought was interesting about it.
There is a book in Italy describing a similar situation. And there was a big discussion in Italy whether this book can be published or not, or should be read or not, because it shows Italian soldiers not like the heroic soldiers we imagine when we think about war movies, but like these nice guys. But at the same time, this is also a topos of Italian war movies, that we were the nice guys at the end. The Germans, they were the really evil guys. We followed them for some time, but at the end we were not as evil as they were, and this is quite strong. But I mean, with the exception perhaps of German war films, I think most war movies fail to critically reflect on the role they had in the story. Uh-huh. And Salvatore, so the director of the movie, he clearly says that he is against war. He also told it at the Oscar ceremony, and he was then, they told him that he should not have done a political statement against war because it was during the Gulf War. So he is against war and he was not interested in showing some heroic Italians. But at the same time, he showed the nice guys who normally Italians are seen as. So,
I mean, it's interesting, I think, the very end of the film. At the end, there's a kind of a text on screen, a dedication. I don't remember the exact words, but it's something along the lines of, this film is dedicated to the ones that ran away. And of course, to some extent, that I think puts the film in a different light, but it also misrepresents it a bit. The characters in this film, they don't run away, not actively. They are lucky to kind of get lost on that island, but it's more this, they don't actively try to escape their kind of paradise to which they've been deserted. But when you talk about, you know, the ones who ran away, which I think is a much more actively pacifist perspective to take, I found it interesting that the film ended with that, but I thought it didn't properly reflect the film. And I was also thinking about, Julia mentioned that there were also Germans who got lost on these islands and never saw any combat. I don't think this film could work for a German group of soldiers without major changes. At the very least, I think the one thing that you would have to have, one of the men would have to be a clear fascist, a clear Nazi, who then somehow gets killed by his own comrades. Because we're not like that. We're the good guys.
No, absolutely. And I think that feeds into the way that the Mediterranean peoples are intermeshed culturally in a way that the Germans obviously are not. And it also feeds into, and I'm not going to spend many words about this, but the way that the Germans, of course, have been made into the personification of evil within the genre. So that means you can't bring them back and say, okay, I've now converted, I'm an ex-Nazi, I've recovered, I'm actually quite a good guy. And this is something that we need another podcast for. But I think that's the way Germans also partly saw themselves, to be very frank with you, after the war. There was a lot of guilt. So I don't think it would have been fitting, even in the context of saying, okay, this is a German project, even then it wouldn't have worked because the shame would have been too great. So no, I completely agree with you. That wouldn't have worked at all. No.
There's also an element here that ties in with what you said. I think the characters in this film at the very end, they talk about the fascists as being someone other than the Italians. I think that is definitely there in the film. The characters.
This is not only in the film. I would say this is in Italy. Everyone else was fascist, but of course not they themselves. There is a group who still today says that they are fascists, but this is a minority. So the role of Italy, and perhaps I can come to some very typical elements in the film. So Italians, with regard to both world wars, they have quite a strong sense of inferiority. At the one hand, technological inferiority, but also with regard to the whole society and their role in the war. So there is no heroic Italian war movie. The most important moment of World War One is Caporetto, when they lost. It was really, they lost a battle and everywhere the soldiers were spreading everywhere. It is a great defeat, and this is the moment that defines First World War First for Italy. Then they stood up, they changed sides. At the end, they won the war, more or less. And in the Second World War, it was the same thing. Or El Alamein, this was a movie about Italian soldiers in Egypt. And the Germans, they drive away in their vehicles and the Italian soldiers are left behind with nothing. So this is very strong sense of inferiority. And it's not very strong, but you see it also in Mediterranean. At least also at the end when the English arrive. I mean, it is quite stereotype there also, but it reflects some strong feelings of the Italians. As I said, these Italians are nice guys. No one was fascist. They learn by chance that now they are allies with the United States and Great Britain from this pilot who arrives by chance on the island. And they take it like, okay, so now we change, we are with the others and it's okay. And the representation of the society I liked very much. So we have the lieutenant who studied, who is a grammar school teacher, who loves art, but he does not earn enough money to go to Greece, to see once Greek islands or Athens by himself. Then we have the other people who are quite, I don't know how to say it, probably illiterate, at least some of them. So the two boys from Veneto, the brothers who stay on the hill all the time, I don't think that they can read. They are unemployed people. So they are people that did not have a lot in Italy. And so they went to war. And now they are thinking about how we could change society when getting back. And when you then see the last scene, when the lieutenant goes back to the Greek island, he finds the other one and he says, yeah, I tried, but nothing changed. And this is a really, really strong topos for Italian, not only war movies, for Italian history and for the Italian mentality. You would like to change, but at the end, you can't change. And so you go on and you go back to the island. You escape again. So I think these are really, and the soccer, I mean,
of course.
They play soccer and they do it. You see that, you know, if you meet in Italy, you meet someone, the first thing you know is if they are from left or right, if you speak politics, and you know which soccer team. These are the two fundamental information. And so how they play soccer, I liked it very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little detail that struck me at the end, and I may have imagined it, is that we go back to the beautiful church, the beautiful chapel, with these guys who are now old guys. And earlier in the film, the, was it a lieutenant, the leader of the squad, he painted or repainted the frescoes in the church. And you get this shot, and I could swear I saw the characters of the film being represented in that fresco. I didn't imagine that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and what that struck me as is there's a bit of nostalgia there as well. And a nostalgia which would have been very misplaced were it about the trenches of World War One, or were it about heinous deeds that were done by fascist Germany in World War Two. But this film gets away with that little bit of nostalgia, where normally I would go like, oh no, for heaven's sakes. I was like, yeah, that kind of fits, doesn't it? Tiny little Eden that was forgotten by the war, yeah.
I think that is a topos that you also have in some English films, though, especially on World War II. I think there's also this almost topos of war as tourism. You know, this is the first time when our boys get out and see the world. Can't remember what it's called now. There was a film in probably around 2000, English film, adaptation of a novel where you had basically the English in Northern Africa. And you had basically, you know, you had their photos of them on camels in front of the pyramids. And there you very much have this impression that it was the war, but basically for them it was tourism. They finally got to see all these things they'd only seen in magazines beforehand. And that there's also this kind of nostalgia there in some of the English films.
I don't think that in Mediterranean it's meant like that. So it's very clear they happened to strand there. No one of them does anything active about it. So they happen to be reservists. They happen to land there and then they don't do everything they probably could to get away earlier. So they take this escape. But I don't know if it's really an early tourism for Italians. I didn't see it like that.
No, it's not a colonialist film. And it's not the problem with the kind of British, almost exploration films, aren't they, that are about the war. They have a very strong colonialist subtext and undertones. Mediterraneo, however, I'm so sorry, however you pronounce it, doesn't have any of that. That is absolutely, that's absolutely for sure. But it does kind of feel like a little holiday card that you might receive from your mum while she is touring the rural Greek islands. Tiny bit, yeah. That much is true.
By the way, I remembered the film that I meant at the book. It was Last Orders, I think, based on a Graham Swift novel. And that it did very much have these, I mean, I don't think it was colonialist in that sense, but it was really these, you know, little Englanders seeing the world for the first time. But I agree. I mean, in Mediterraneo, they obviously, they're stranded there. But once they're there, also in the images, it is very much, I could imagine that lots of people watched this film and thought, I want to go there too. I want to be lost there too.
Yeah, there were worse places to get lost. Lost.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly.
It shows their passivity. They are like very passive towards the war. They're passive towards the changes in the war. So they don't really, it's not that important to them what happens around them. So when the guy from Turkey arrives with some opium, they are happy. They ask him who won the war. He says, I don't know. And then it's okay. So they are really quite passive figures in this context of the war. And this perhaps is also a topos of Italy sometimes. Whatever may come, we will try to do something about it, or ideally the best. But yeah. We can't change anything anyway.
And I think a lot of that is very Italy specific, but parts of it are also pretty universal. I think there must have been a lot of people who are no longer talked about who were disenfranchised within Europe, and sort of the war kind of happened to them. And they didn't really have a very clear idea about it one way or the other until it had happened to them and they had to do something. So I think those are pretty universalists as well in the abstract. So in the concrete sense, as Laura rightly says, it's a pretty Italian thing. But I think in the abstract sense, I think these are pretty universalist themes where you go like, well, I didn't ask for this bloody war, so I'm not going to run towards it. You know, I don't have a death wish. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. One thing I was wondering, I mean, when I watched the film, I definitely think that there's an element of, you know, this is a fantasy. If you have to go to war, this is what you might imagine should happen to you, unless your fantasy is to run around with a gun and kill the enemy. I think there's also an element to it in which the film is a male fantasy, because all these men arrive there on this island. And of course, at first, there's no one to be seen. But after a while, all the children, all the women turn up and the old men. But the women obviously are beautiful and also they are available. And in that respect, as I said, I do think there is a slight element here of the male fantasy. How did the two of you see that?
Yes, you're right. That's absolutely true. And this is also one of the elements I'm quite ambivalent about. So, I mean, it's quite paradise. You arrive in a place and all young men have gone, are not there anymore for some reason. And so, yes, one of these women shows up and says, I'm doing the work of prostitute. Would you be interested? And yes, of course, they are. And also the girl who is with the two brothers on the hills. Yes, probably there is. But it's not that strong that I would strongly dislike the film for that aspect.
No, because it's so completely idiotic. I mean, it is. It feeds into, again, this holiday fantasy of men who are surrounded by escorts who are more than willing to, you know, give them whatever they like. They are all either complete innocents or they're sex workers. And this is so patently absurd that I can't take it seriously. And I'm not able to take as much offense as I should at it, because I'm like, yeah, well, come on, boys, grow up, you know. And because that feeds into the theme of the film, we have to grow up. And if we put that off, or if we don't want to grow up, at some point, reality is going to catch up with you. I'm like, well, okay, but not with any huge conviction.
Okay, I think we've talked about a lot of topics with respect to war movies and Mediterranean. One thing I would have liked to quickly come back to, I think, Laura, you mentioned that earlier on, how with war films and with films in general, obviously it matters when were they made, where were they made. We've talked about the Italian aspect, but I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on when the film was made and when it came out? Why a film about this in 1991?
Yes, so one answer might be Salvatore. He did three films. Mediterranean was the third of the three, all talking about escapes. And some years before, there was this discussion going on regarding the book that was published describing more or less a similar situation of Italian soldiers on an island. Then there were all the wars going on in the Middle East. I don't really know Salvatore so well, but these might be elements. And perhaps the critical distance from World War II was already there, so it would have been much more difficult to produce a similar movie in the 70s, because Italian movies were completely in a different direction at the time. Yeah, but I can't really answer this question.
I think this probably brings us to a good end. I really enjoyed this conversation also because I think it gave me a certain perspective on the film, also the historical and cultural perspective that I was lacking before. So first of all, thank you very much, Laura, for joining us and talking to us about war movies and about Mediterraneo.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I think, especially since Julie already mentioned it, it is very well possible that we'll go back to the well of war movies at some point, because there's so much to talk about there. There's so many examples. You both brought up lots of films that I think would make for great episodes, from Battle of Algiers to Waltz with Bashir. But then there's also, of course, weirder and stranger films like, for instance, Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds. There's so much material there, so I think sooner or later we will probably return to this. But for now, thank you both very much. Thank you to our listeners, as always. And we will be back in a month's time with more Damn Fine Cups of Culture. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.